In 2016, with absolutely no party, no candles, no cake, Pine Gap celebrated its 50th anniversary. The lack of celebration, though, was understandable because Pine Gap is, after all, the most secret place in Australia. And this secrecy disguises the fact that its role has radically changed in the half century since its grand opening. Now, from a defensive facility monitoring Soviet missile tests to one intercepting enemy battlefield communication and relaying it in real time to friendly commanders on the ground. Tom Gilling, sitting opposite me in our studio, has been looking into the history of Pine Gap in his new book, Project Australia, and I held it up to the camera because we are, as usual now, being videotaped, The Secret History of Pine Gap. Tom, good to have you here.
Thanks, Philip.
I have to tell you something personal. I was bodily abducted by aliens and subject to agonising anal probing, so I'm preoccupied with UFOs. So I want to ask you about that first, because there is a relationship, isn't there, between Pine Gap and UFOing?
Well, there is. I was quite startled when I was looking through some declassified files, CIA files, to find a signature at the bottom of a CIA study of UFO sightings in the United States. And I recognise this as the same name as one of the fellows who was scouting locations for Pine Gap. In fact, he was one of three men who apparently sat down in the red dirt 12 kilometres outside Alice Springs and toasted the place where they were going to build Pine Gap.
So the same guy who settled on the Pine Gap site signed off on an investigation into UFOs.
He did. The CIA was very reluctantly interested in UFOs. It didn't want it to be known that it had any role at all in investigating UFOs. But there was a huge interest in UFOs in the 1960s and 70s.
And the CIA were worried that the Soviets might have been fermenting this hysteria.
Well, they were, because it was hard to trace the funding of some of the UFO societies in America, and there were suspicions that the Soviets might have been behind them. There was also the puzzle that no sightings were ever mentioned over the Soviet Union. So it clearly was not a subject for discussion there, and there was a feeling that the Soviets would be quite interested in promoting the sort of hysteria that was going around America.
Well, you know, you started our chat by making me feel bitterly disappointed, because the CIA looked into 12,000, 1,618 sightings. I've counted them. And they found 710 which couldn't be identified. That's only 5%.
Well, 5% of quite a large number, yes. I think the number in Australia was a bit less than 5%. It was maybe 1% or 2%. But
they didn't talk to me. I had personal experience. Okay, if it's not looking for aliens, what are they looking for at Pine Gap?
Well, the role has changed quite a lot since it began in the late 1960s. So it started really trying to listen to signals given out by Russian missile tests. And now its role has changed significantly. It's really plays a key role in the Pentagon's war machine. It's listening to phones, listening to terrorists on mobile phones in order to geolocate their position and set up drone strikes. It's listening to microwave communications in Europe. It's also listening to a huge amount more. The Echelon project, which is part of the Five Eyes system of all the allies spying on the rest of the world, is collating vast amounts of information, and a lot of it is going through Pine Gap.
Now, I understand that its satellites are 36,000 kilometres above the Earth, so what can they see? A third, a half of the...
They can see about a third of the planet, yes. These geostationary satellites, they sit that height above the Earth, and it means effectively that they don't move in their orbit. So they can sit over a place that might be of interest to the Americans rather than having to orbit the Earth as they would in a lower orbit.
I want to go back and romanticise this great adventure. The first of their satellites were launched in 1970, positioned above Borneo.
positioned above Borneo, but still positioned handily enough to keep an eye on Soviet missile tests in Siberia. But also handy to be moved in 1971. It was repositioned to be able to listen to the what was going on in the India-Pakistan war.
Well, that's now once again an area of great interest. So they can swivel the damn things around.
They can move the directions of the antenna and change what they're listening to.
And they can look down on, for example, the Vietnam War.
They did look down on the Vietnam War in the early 70s, yes. And then another was positioned over the Horn of Africa, again, well positioned to listen to what was going on in Eastern Europe. And then in 1975, a new satellite was launched. It was twice as big and twice as heavy as anything that had been put up there before. And it collected such a vast amount of information at such vast cost that Congress actually cancelled the program.
But that's interesting, isn't it? Even the early satellites could pick up so many conversations that billions had to be spent on processing and analysing.
Well, that's right.
Were too good at their job.
They were too good at their job. The National Security Agency, which is the American agency that's in charge of Pine Gap, has been from the beginning, apparently has the capacity to harvest and store information equivalent to 150 miles of paper.
Now, Pine Gap was so advanced, even in the 70s, that they could listen to the commander of the Soviet Northern Fleet talking to headquarters in Moscow.
Yes, Paul Dibb, who wrote famous white paper on Australian defence, was actually allowed into the inner sanctum of Pine Gap and was patched through to one of these commanders.
How close have you got personally? I was turned away at the gates without any ceremony, despite the fact that I could have told them about them. Absolutely.
You were in good company because several journalists went up seeing how close they could get. They were usually turned away by Commonwealth policemen. The closest I've got actually is rooting around in archives in Canberra and CIA archives.
Look, there's a wonderful story here that there were negotiations went on about how many Australians should be employed there, and the Americans reluctantly agreed, but they got the numbers by hiring gardeners and people like that.
They did. The gardeners, the laundrymen, the painters, the cooks were all Australians, but the spies were all Americans. In fact, it was quite late, I think, even in 1978, Des Ball said that out of about 200 spies there, there were still only a couple of dozen who were Australian.
And when we had spies there, they were kept at a distance from core operations and, as you report, even ostracised.
Yeah, there was certainly a feeling among the Australians that they were not playing the role that they believed they were going to when the original treaty was signed.
Tell me about Leonce Keeley.
I think he became rather embittered working there. He was one of the very first Australian computer analysts who worked at Pine Gap. And he began to feel that his work was not appreciated. He was not being looked at for promotions. And he took rather drastic action one day and deleted a program, a significant program that he'd written for Pine Gap.
What happened to him?
He wrote a book about his experiences that seems to have had some trouble finding a publisher.
Okay, now your research reminds us, and something I've been talking about lately, in the context of people who advocate nuclear power and its inevitable links to nuclear weapons, people forget if they ever knew that Australia was planning at some point, under Gordon principally, to go nuclear with weapons.
He was, yes. Menzies had been quite comfortable feeling that the British would protect him. And after him, Holt was very comfortable that the American nuclear umbrella would protect us. But Gorton was not at all confident. In fact, way back in 1957, he'd stood up in the Senate and said that we couldn't really expect Britain or America to bring their nuclear powers to defend us and that we needed our own nuclear weapon.
And of course, cost wasn't such a huge issue. As you remind us, it would have taken about 150 mil to build a nuclear bomb and 180 million to make a hydrogen bomb.
Astonishingly low figures.
Bargains,
when you think about it.
Bargains.
Yes. But there was quite a lot of confidence in certain areas of the government and in Australian scientific circles that it was actually a project that Australia was capable of tackling.
These days, of course, we've got a POTUS who tears up treaties, but at that stage the Americans wanted to sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty rather than get our own nukes.
They wanted everyone to sign it. The British, the Soviets, the Americans were all keen that the rest of the world would sign up to not have the weapons that they already had. Yes, Australia was, under Gorton, was very concerned that if we signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty without having first guaranteed some kind of nuclear protection, we could be in big trouble, especially since the Chinese had by then exploded their own test.
LNL on RN. Download us wherever you get your podcasts or listen on the ABC Listen app. Sitting with me, Tom Gilling, the author of Project Rainfall, The Secret History of Pine Gap. Why Rainfall?
Rainfall was its code name for the National Security Agency. It was an American code name. One of the few non-secret...
Sounds a bit Bob Dylan-ish, doesn't it?
It does.
Hard rain is going to fall.
One of the few non-secret code names that it's got.
Now, when Gough was elected in 72, the Americans were worried that he might do something reckless with Pine Gap, perhaps even close it.
He was, I think, unlikely to... He would not have closed it if it had been up to him, but he was certainly being put in a very awkward position by the left of the Labour Party, which in 1972, in fact, adopted a policy that was pushing them in the direction of non-alignment. And that would have been a big risk to the Americans if he'd been forced to do that.
See, I remember that because that was happening at the 1971 annual conference in Launceston, of all places.
Correct. I said 1972. I was wrong.
And Jim Cairns, a very old mate of mine, was saying that Gorton made Australia a nuclear target with Pine Gap, and I'm sure that was true.
I'm sure that was true. And yes, the Americans were terrified when Cairns became elected the deputy leader, because they felt that Cairns would have pushed a far harder left wing agenda, and he was vocally committed to removing the American bases.
Okay, now Whitlam didn't close the place down, but at the same time, and you're aware of a thousand conspiracy theories that swirl around Whitlam's sudden departure. He did have to do something. He did have to sort of negotiate some changes.
Well, he was part of a process that negotiated Australia towards a much more of 50-50, a genuine joint operation of Pine Gap, which
not was just the gardeners,
not just the gardeners and the laundrymen, and the fifth. From the beginning, it was supposed to have been a joint facility, but it was joint in name only, really, for quite a long time.
So there was nail biting there from the Americans whilst Gough was in office.
Certainly, Gough had, it wasn't just Gough, but Gough's cabinet had been very critical of Nixon's bombing of Hanoi, and that seemed to be part of a general untrustworthiness on the part of Australia that suggested that the bases could be jeopardised.
One interesting byproduct of Pine Gap, which I didn't know, was what would have happened to Alice Springs if the Soviets attacked it with nuclear weapons, which was considered likely in the event of a nuclear war. What was the thinking around the impact on Alice?
Well, there was a study commissioned by Malcolm Fraser in 1980, and the Office of National Assessments found that, as you say, if there was a nuclear war in the Northern Hemisphere, then and Pine Gap was likely to be a target, but there wasn't likely to be a war. They predicted that there would be broken windows and a few fires close to the base. But in fact, another report was done by an Alice Springs doctor, which was made it sound as if it would be much more dangerous. He was a local, and so he was looking at the damage caused by the blast, at the heat. The ONA... assessment seemed very much like a report commissioned in Canberra to be read in Canberra by no one who had any interest in being anywhere near Alice Springs.
Was Pine Gap instrumental in getting Osama bin Laden?
Unfortunately not, no. It's possible that information had been collected at Pine Gap that would have found him. But as we were talking about earlier, the vast amounts of information that is gathered by the satellites, what they need is the information to be analysed. And so sometimes there's a log jam there about actually being able to process the huge amount of information they get.
Okay, let's look at what happens now. You mentioned drone warfare in passing now. That's the future. It's, you know, the face of war is changing so fast and so dramatically. I take it Pine Gap is absolutely cutting edge and up to speed?
Absolutely, yes. I think that they, in the Gulf War, they started, they played an important role in American military operations there, listening to launches from Scud missiles. They were able to identify the missile launchers. Unfortunately, I think none of them were attacked by Allied aircraft, but they certainly were able to locate where they were. And since then, they've been playing a critical part in that, in locating targets for drone strikes.
So Australia plays a crucial part. We're a part of the jigsaw puzzle in this ongoing attacks around the world right now.
We're undoubtedly obtaining the intelligence that allows those attacks to go ahead. I think we like to play the role that we're only finding intelligence and then passing it on, and whatever action the Americans choose to take is their business. But
are the Americans now totally open with Australia?
I think it's an Australian is the deputy commander of Pine Gap. And yes, ostensibly, Australia has oversight of everything that goes through there. And I'm sure we would like to believe that that's true.
Before I let you go, you talk about the three main changes. Let's quickly go through them. One?
Well, the first change is that the staff has become much more military oriented.
They were civilians, weren't they?
They were civilians. The CIA is a civilian organisation. It's much more coming from the military now. It's become more Australian, that Australia now has pretty much a 50-50 role in operations. But also it's shifted from a role in arms control and non-proliferation to being an active part of the Pentagon's military machine.
Second?
Well, those are the three.
Oh, okay. You've just done the lot in one hit. Okay, well, look, I find that absolutely fascinating. One question, do we pay much money towards its budget?
I think the Americans have always paid the lion's share of that. We had a certain amount of infrastructure to build, but money wasn't really an issue when Pine Gap was built, and I suspect it isn't now.
Now, I've began this ruthless interrogation by talking about my experiences with bodily abduction, still painful in that area to this day. Now, as you know, the US military have taken the unprecedented step of labelling a video shot from an F-18 jet as of an unidentified flying object. Can you say categorically Pine Gap is not being used to investigate UFOs?
Well, I would be running against a lot of chatter on the internet, which suggests that all kinds of strange business is going on at Pine Gap.
Where'd you get your stuff from? You got access. Sorry, where did you get your information from? I take it you've got access from recently declassified documents.
Exactly. Yes, there's a lot of information is steadily released over the years, but there's a lot of fascinating stuff in the National Archives in Australia and in CIA archives.
One assumes also in Russian archives.
Well, I think the Russians have always read a lot of American periodicals. The Americans have always been much better at getting information out than we have.
If you were given prime ministerial responsibility, and the job often changes hands, what would your advice be to Australia? Keep it or shut the damn thing down?
Well, I think it needs a discussion. Really, I think it's something we are part of something that many people would see as an invidious activity, which is shoot to kill with judge, jury, and executioner. And there's really very little discussion of that in Australia, and we're a crucial part of a system that enables that to go ahead.
Tom, thank you very, very much for that. My guest in the studio, Tom Gilling, and the book is Project Rainfall, The Secret History of Pine Gap, published by Allen and Unwin.